是
啊。I did.
It's 15 minutes, and I'm going to give you a note of 5 minutes.
Okay. This is going to be brief.
So glance at me. If someone has to, just keep going.
Oh my gosh.
I finally had to stand up. He wasn't getting me in.
One of the tables didn't translate.
Well,
that's okay. I'll walk people through it.
Yeah. Okay.
I did it. Bye. So what are you going to do? Do you need me to tell you who I am? Is that it to tell you who I am?
I mean,
yeah, they...
Whatever you want to know.
I could just say affiliation.
Yeah, that's the current name. That may not be a good thing. You try to get more members. Say something good about them.
No, I will. I'm going to say
we have a social tomorrow night.
I
should do the commercial.
I've been learning that. Tell two truths and a lie and have the audience vote on which one.
We're going to start in about 2 minutes. Give more people a chance to get in here. And isn't this nice? You're right in the agreement.
Yeah.
So it's nice. Here's the order of Brian.
Brian.
Simon, you're number 3.
Okay.
Okay, hello. I want to welcome you all. This is HIV/AIDS section, session 3415, Innovative Approaches to Reducing HIV Among Men Who Have Sex with Men. I'm your moderator, Bonnie Chakravorty, and I'd like to declare that I have no relationships that I want to talk about in front of you, so, but nothing that APHA would be interested in. So, without further ado, they might. Okay, well, we hope to have a very interesting and provocative session here. And I would like to first introduce our speaker, Dr. Brian Dodge. And Brian is the Assistant Research Scientist in the Department of Applied Health Science and the Associate Director of the Center for Sexual Health Promotion at Indiana University at Bloomington. And you can read his title, and here he comes now. Please save your questions for after all of our speakers have presented. Thank you.
Thanks, Bonnie, and thanks everyone for coming in today. I don't know about you, but this is actually my third talk of the afternoon, so if I start to trail off, just smack me around a little bit. But I just want to acknowledge right off the get-go my colleagues on this project, Dr. Michael Reese, Debbie Herbenick at the Center for Sexual Health Promotion, also our research assistants, Christopher Fisher, Sonia Satinsky, and Nate Stupansky, who's now at IU School of Medicine. And I'm just going to state right off the bat that actually this talk just came out in paper form in Sexually Transmitted Infections. Just about a month ago, I brought a couple reprint copies with me. So if you're interested, see me afterwards and let me know, and I'll hook you up. Just a little bit of an overview of what I'll be talking about today with this study, a background, the aim, the methods, results, conclusions. It's pretty straightforward. In terms of sexual compulsivity and sexually transmitted infections, or STI, what I'll probably use for short, they're a risk factor for HIV acquisition, obviously, as well as a behavioral marker for other risks. Sexual compulsivity, how many people in the room, just out of curiosity, are familiar with the term sexual compulsivity or sexual addiction, compulsive sexual behavior? It's been sort of conceptualized as an insistent, repetitive, intrusive, and unwanted urge to perform sexual acts, often in ritualized and routinized fashions. I do want to point off right out the bat that there's a debate within the field, I think, in terms of, you know, whether or not sexual compulsivity or sexual addiction really exist as a clinical condition, or whether or not they're used in some ways, including researchers and scientists, as ways of medicalizing and pathologizing sexual behaviors further, particularly among groups like men who have sex with men, who are often pathologized to begin with. That's a whole philosophical debate I can talk about during question and answer if you're interested. But we've used this particular scale by Kalishman and Rampa in quite a few of our samples, all different sorts of samples, from heterosexual college students to bisexual, crack smoking, sex workers, and in other samples throughout the literature, it's been shown to be valid and reliable. And in this particular study, we were interested in looking at sexual compulsivity and its relationship to STI risk, because there's been quite a bit of work done on its relation to HIV risk behavior, particularly in large cities on the East Coast and on the West Coast, but little work has explored the concept in relation to other sexually transmitted infections other than HIV, and also in mid-sized sort of Midwestern urban areas where we did this study. So that was our aim, to assess relations between sexual compulsivity and history of STI diagnosis among men who have sex with men and in a mid-sized urban area of the Midwestern United States, parentheses, Indianapolis. It's not a mystery. It's published in the paper. So, and I'll be talking quite a bit about, hopefully, some unique aspects of the Indianapolis community, too, and how it might be different from other cities and particularly larger urban areas. In terms of data collection, this was a community-based participatory research project. It was actually started before I came back to Indiana University while I was still at Columbia University doing my postdoc. It was started by Dr. Reese and Dr. Herbenick as partnering with the Indiana State Department of Health and their subcommittee for, called the Stamp Out Syphilis Coalition. We tend to have spikes in syphilis every few years in Indianapolis, which manifest often most among men who have sex with men. And so this was done as an assessment of sexual and risk behavior in... Sorry, I've offended someone already. partnering with the Department of Health, also a wide range of other community-based organizations that provide HIV, STI, and other sexual health-type outreach. And members from all of these different entities collaboratively determine the research questions, develop the instruments, and design strategies for recruitment and collecting data, which I think has both pros and cons that hopefully you might have a time to talk about. In terms of participant recruitment, we had 504 men. This was the largest study of its kind ever done in Indianapolis in terms of an assessment of MSM sexual behavior. We did venue-based sampling, including bars, bathhouses, and one house ball event, and also supplemented that with internet sampling in local MSM chat rooms, and all participants received a $10 retail gift card upon completion. So the venues that we were targeting were sort of the usual suspects that are often done in studies like this, but we were also gathering information on other venues where MSM and men who have sex with both men and women and other people who often don't go into these venues congregate for future studies, which we're starting to work on now, kind of mapping the sexual community. Consistent with other studies, we had, with the sexual compulsivity scale, which I'll show you in a moment, participants who scored higher than one standard deviation above the mean were classified as high in sexual compulsivity, and those who fell one standard deviation below were classified as low in sexual compulsivity. And we used descriptive and bivariate techniques to look at the relations between STS scores and certain characteristics. So the majority of the men in the sample self-identified as bisexual. Were also the majority of the men were white. Just over half of them were single, although there were some other relationship patterns that fell out. And 82% of them had attended some college. So this was a fairly run-of-the-mill sort of white MSM community. And in terms of the sexual compulsivity scale, for those of you who have seen it or have never seen it, it's a 10-item scale. In our sample, it had a high level of reliability of 0.9, and all item-to-total correlations were 0.50 or higher. But you can see here some of the items on the scale. My sexual appetites got in the way of my relationships. My desires to have sex have disrupted my daily life. I sometimes get so horny I could lose control. So again, this scale really attempts, although there's some debate as to whether or not it actually does, but attempts to distinctly tap into something that's more than, oh, just I have a pretty high sex drive. It's sex actually becomes problematic for individuals, and that's what they're trying to tap into with this scale. So in terms of characteristics, participants with higher compulsivity scores were more likely than those with lower to be in a sexual relationship with more than one person or to be sexually active outside of the context of a relationship. It's not necessarily earth-shattering, but no other demographic variables were associated. In terms of venue use, we used logistic regression and found to assess whether or not participants' use of specific venues for meeting sexual partners was predictive of higher scores of sexual compulsivity. And interestingly, men who reported meeting sexual partners on phone chat lines and cruising spots had significantly higher odds of scoring highly on the STS measure, although scores were elevated across the board. But in other work that we've done, particularly working with men who cruise for sex in public places, this was of interest to us. And another something maybe we can talk about during the discussion. In terms of the sexual compulsivity and sexual risk, the scale demonstrated construct validity in this sample, given that the relation to numbers of sexual risk behaviors and number of encounters were found in the direction that we had anticipated them. More men who scored higher on the STS were more likely to have engaged in insertive anal sex with other men, and in addition, they were more likely to have engaged in unprotective insertive vaginal sex with female partners. And in terms of HIV diagnosis, there were no significant differences in the mean scores of the high and low compulsivity. But with STI diagnosis, men who scored higher on the STS were significantly more likely to have been diagnosed with sexually transmitted infections across the board. This included chlamydia, gonorrhea, both hepatitis A and B, and marginally syphilis. this table, which somehow didn't translate into this PowerPoint slide that I have here, shows at least the chi-square values and the p-values, but you can see that very strong relationships with almost all of the STIs that we assessed. And I, in the publication, if you want the reprint, I can give you a better looking table. I apologize about that. And then in terms of STI testing, a total of 154 of the men had been tested for STI in the past year, and the majority of these were, interestingly, in a hospital setting, followed by a private doctor, clinic, and then other settings, including health department, CBOs, and jail. And it's interesting to note that of the men who scored high on the sexual compulsivity scale, they were no more likely than other men to have tested. So the higher amounts of sexually transmitted infections that we were seeing in men with higher scores on SES were not a function of them testing more often than other men. And of those who scored low, you can see here over half of them had been tested in the past year, whereas half of those who scored high had been tested for STI in the previous year. So although the elevated scores on measures of sexual compulsivity have been predictive of HIV-related risk behavior, there's been little work done to look at the ongoing relations between sexual compulsivity and STI other than HIV. And I think it's very important. We're in the presentation I did just moments before this, which was looking at bringing self-sampling methods for rectal sexually transmitted infections. I think there's obviously many of us in the room know a major disconnect between HIV and other sexually transmitted infections that's existed historically in our public health infrastructure. And I think this, you know, for many reasons, there are ways that we should be working to sort of close this gap. In the community-based assessment of MSM in Indianapolis, participants who scored higher on the measure of compulsivity were significantly more likely to have been diagnosed with STI than other men. That was the major finding from our study. And despite the higher levels of sexual risk and higher levels of STI diagnosis, they were no more likely than other men to have been tested for STI. So really what we were taking away from this, in addition to this being used as sort of a research tool to determine levels of sexual compulsivity in samples, we feel that given the strong relations that it showed with, you know, STI history, that measures of sexual compulsivity like this might be useful as a supplemental tool in healthcare settings, or in creating programs in helping to identify individuals who might be at higher behavioral risk of STI and who might benefit from testing. So just in terms of acknowledgement, again, I'm sorry, this was actually funded by the Indiana State Department of Health and the Indianapolis Health Foundation, the team which gathered the data and really made the study work was called the Indy Men's Sex Study Team. We're actually now putting out a community report for the Indianapolis MSM community, sort of a nice glossy, you know, sex in the city kind of thing that just shows what's going on in terms of MSM behavior, because there's actually, we found, you know, some findings like this of concern, but interestingly, we've also found that there's quite a bit of protective and positive sexual behavior going on with many of the MSM in Indianapolis too, and hopefully those results can be shared at a later date. I too obviously do not have any financial relationships or other relationships that I want to disclose at this time, unless you have a few hours or days. But if you would like to get in contact with me or with anyone else at our center, this is our website address. And again, I'll be here. I'll stick around for a while. If you'd like a reprint of the article, I can, and to chat about anything, I can talk to you afterwards too. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. And now I would like to introduce to you Dr. Simon Rosser. And he has an illustrious background, so I'm not going to tell you all about it, but I will tell you that he is professor and director of the HIV-STI Intervention and Prevention Studies Program, HIPS program, in the Division of Epidemiology and Community Health at the School of Public Health at the University of Minnesota. He's got more degrees in his thermometer here. He's got advanced degrees in psychology, epidemiology, behavioral medicine, and so forth and so on. He is training in clinical research in sexology. He's a New Zealander and helped found the New Zealand AIDS Foundation. As I say, there's just so much to say about him, but I'll let him speak for himself here. And he is going to present now on the topic, challenges in implementing an online HIV prevention program for men who use the internet to seek sex with other men. Lessons learned from Men's Internet Study 2, the MINCE 2 study.